702.
Call Refilwe on 011
883 0702.
And at 14 minutes past six, it is my pleasure to welcome back to Weekend Breakfast Claire Ann Kilroe-Aruka, who is a physiotherapist in private practice and is a part-time lecturer at the Wits University Physiotherapy Department. She has lectured and examined at a postgraduate level and has been involved for over 20 years with athletes and dancers at a national and international level. So a big, big pleasure to welcome you back to the program. Claire, hi. Hope you're well today.
Hi, thanks for feeling. Yes, yeah, it's a lovely summer's morning. It's nice to have a bit of sunshine.
So no complaints. Very good to hear. So Claire, something that we are looking at this morning and just seeking to understand better is, you know, knowing what level of physical ability and mental health post COVID can be, knowing that the low level of physical ability as well as mental health post COVID can be a barrier to exercise, right? And amongst all those things, we're trying to get back to being healthy. We're trying to get back to either being as active as we used to be, or just we've got physical fitness top of mind at this point. But the focus on returning to activity after COVID ought to look like what? Because from your vantage point, I'm sure you've seen some rather interesting cases when it comes to people, especially athletes, trying to return to activity after being sick with COVID.
The first thing I want to say is that I don't think that this is new. It's really interesting. Doctors for many years actually have been reporting kind of this malaise and this fatigue that seems to come post-viral pandemic. So even back kind of in the 1890s and 2013 when you had the first H1N1 virus pandemic, and even back in 2003 with SARS, doctors have spoken about this fatigue, malaise, mental dullness, and kind of emotional low ability, depression that's associated with viruses. So it's not something new, but I think this is the first time that it's happened on such a wide scale. And we know there's so much research that's available from very reliable sources about the benefits of exercise for that. So we sit in this kind of juxtaposition between the fact that exercise is actually going to help you get better from COVID, from an emotional point of view, as well as from a physical point of view, as well as from just purely a recovery from the inflammation that the virus itself causes. And that's kind of juxtaposed to the fact that it's really difficult because every time you exercise, you just feel so terrible. But the interesting thing is that we've been working on this now, and the great thing is the whole world is involved in this. So they've come up with a really great guideline as to how it is that you can get back to exercise. And the big thing that you've got to know is you've got to know your body. You've got to monitor how your body's responding to exercise. And I don't think that's a bad thing for the world to learn, to actually learn how to listen to our own body and respond to what we say. So the first thing that everyone said is that we need to start off very gently. With COVID, there are two things. It's an inflammatory reaction throughout the whole body, mostly affecting the blood vessels. And the second thing is that obviously affects the lungs as well. And the interesting thing about the breathing effect of COVID is the fact that even if you've had mild symptoms, it seems to result in you breathing very much on the top of your lungs. So we call it atypical breathing.
All right. Claire, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to ask you to just stop right there. I'm going to put you back to my producer. The line seems to have deteriorated as you were speaking. So let me put you back to the producer. Let's see if we can give you a call, call you back and see if we get a better line. So we definitely need to hear you in this regard. Give us a shout on 072-702-1702. That's the WhatsApp line. You can send your messages or even your voice notes there. Joining me on the line is Claire Ann Kilroe, physiotherapist, lecturer. And what we're talking about is, you know, the approach that we need to take when it comes to returning to exercise post-COVID-19 infection. And what Claire's generally touching on is the fact that post-exertion malaise is known and understood to be related to an inflammatory response within the body. So this fatigue that we're talking about, or this inability to, the extreme fatigue after exertion is understandable. And Claire's just giving us some tips on how exactly you can approach this on your way to recovery and back to fitness. Claire, I hope we've got you back on a better line. Let's try that again.
Hi, Rafilu. Sorry about that.
Perfect. So, nice and clear.
As I was saying, the biggest thing about COVID, even if you've just had mild symptoms, is that the way we seem to breathe seems to be quite affected. We breathe with the top of our lungs rather than breathing down into the lower part of our lungs, into our diaphragm. Mm-hmm. And that has two effects. Number one is the bottom part of our lungs are much bigger, and so you get much more oxygenation if you breathe into the bottom of your lungs. But the other interesting thing is that our diaphragm is actually really important for our body posture, our body position, and to stop body pain. So if we don't use our diaphragm dysfunction is associated with back pain, both in the lower back as well as in the upper back, and is also associated with neck pain. Mm. And one of the other points that is really interesting that I don't think people are aware of is if your diaphragm doesn't work, it actually even affects your bladder and bowel function. So if you're post-COVID and you have changes in your bladder and bowel habits, it's really important to either go and consult with a physio or to go and see your doctor, but not to panic about it, because it seems to be that it's actually this diaphragm dysfunction that seems to be resulting in it.
Okay. So, I'm going to ask you to just stay with the diaphragm dysfunction there for a little bit and unpack that a little bit more for us. Diaphragm dysfunction, I don't think a phrase that I've heard about or had heard used too many times. The definition of that and how then one treats it or thinks around the diaphragm dysfunction.
So basically, diaphragm dysfunction is just the fact that your diaphragm isn't doing its job. So the diaphragm isn't able to drop down to allow your lungs to expand fully. And the big thing with that is when you do diaphragmatic breathing, you should actually have your stomach coming out slightly, as it is that your diaphragm drops down, and as you breathe out, your stomach kind of draws in to allow the diaphragm to kind of pump the air out of your lungs. And that's the function of the diaphragm. The diaphragm kind of relaxes to allow your lungs to fill, and it rises up in your lung cavity to actually pump the air out. Mm-hmm. But it is attached actually to your vertebral column. And it's because of that attachment to your vertebral column that it actually helps to keep your back functioning the way it's supposed to. So it keeps the posture of your back correct and also allows your thoracic spine, so your upper back portion, to actually allow movement in that upper back portion to allow that part to allow your lungs to expand, as well as to keep your head supported over your back. Mm-hmm. So it's really important for kind of the posture of our body. The other thing is that the diaphragm, you know, there's massive talk about the core, but the core is basically your diaphragm as the lid, your stomach muscles as the front part, your back muscles kind of as the back of the cylinder, and then your pelvic floor actually is the bottom part of your core. Okay. But that pelvic floor is actually what controls your bladder and bowel. It's kind of the last stop before it is that you kind of go to the bathroom. Mm-hmm. And if it is that the roof of this core doesn't work or the cylinder doesn't work, unfortunately the floor is also affected by it as well.
Okay. Terribly, terribly interesting stuff. Really fascinating. So physiotherapy then can help you with all these areas, including this correct breathing techniques that you're talking about, this diaphragmatic breathing, right?
Absolutely. So physiotherapists mm-hmm. have for years been working on correcting breathing techniques from patients who are very ill in hospital, even to patients who kind of are athletes and need to just improve breathing function. So there are an array of exercises that are really easy to fit into your life and really easy to do that can restore diaphragmatic breathing and other breathing, so lateral breathing of your lungs that they expand out sideways. Also teaching you how to cough effectively, and also how to breathe with movement, which is often something that we are noticing in COVID they lose. So they kind of, because they're breathing so shallowly, what often happens is that they just don't allow their breath to actually function with walking, with running, with normal exercise.
Sure.
And that's very easily restored, actually. So the research is showing that when you are trying to get back to exercise, the two things that you should start off with is simple breathing exercises and stretching and movement exercises just to restore the body's ability to move and to actually function when it is that we are moving.
Okay. So the stretching and the breathing, that's your first port of call. Now, do I need to go see a Claire who can advise me and show me how to do the correct type of breathing and what kind of stretches I need to do? Or is this something that I can simply find online or just, yeah, when it comes to the stretches, kind of do intuitively if you've been physically active before?
So I think it depends on the severity of your illness. If it is, there is a lot of evidence available online, and lots of physiotherapy websites have actually published what we call the active cycle of breathing, which is one of the exercises that we use to actually restore normal breathing function. And that's really readily available. If it is that you haven't been too sick, then start with that. Mm-hmm. But if it is that you've been very ill, it's always advisable to go to a physiotherapist or your medical doctor, but probably your physiotherapist has got more time for this, to actually teach you the skills properly. And it doesn't take long. It takes one, maybe two appointments, and then you're actually able to start incorporating it into your life. The other big thing is that you need to actually understand and monitor your symptoms. And that's the other big thing about returning to activity post-COVID, is that you need to see how your body responds to exercise and to activity. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is very important for us to have somebody who's trained in that to actually understand it. So there's simple things that you can do, monitoring your heart rate. The recommendations are that your heart rate shouldn't go above 20 beats per minute from your normal resting baseline.
Mm-hmm.
Your respiratory rate is, and it's actually a really cool way of monitoring it. You should be able to hold a very stilted conversation, and that's kind of your proper respiratory rate. Your temperature shouldn't be over 37.2. And then those oxygen saturation monitors are actually very accurate and are freely available. And so if you were sick or you are concerned, pop that on and monitor to make sure that your oxygen levels don't fall below 92.
Mm-hmm.
And if they fall below 88, you've got to stop exercise. Not forever, just for now. And then you try again a few days later and monitor again. And if we monitor and we gradually start getting ourselves back to exercise, we seem to have a much more consistent and safe way of actually returning to exercise after COVID.
All right. There's a point that you make that if you push your body too hard, the body may fail and COVID symptoms may return. What is happening in that instance?
So there are two things that are happening. We're speaking about long COVID or post-COVID syndrome.
Sure.
And basically what that is that's persistent symptoms of COVID for longer than the 2 weeks that you're supposed to have been sick for. And if you have long COVID, it's actually up to 12 weeks of symptoms. And the evidence is showing kind of 7 months later, some patients have still got symptoms of COVID. And those symptoms of COVID are increased heart rate, extreme fatigue and malaise, persistent headaches, shortness of breath, and this post-exertional fatigue or malaise is one of the most debilitating symptoms of long COVID. And it's literally whether you're exposed to emotional stress, whether you're exposed to physical exertion, whether you're exposed to mental exertion, that you just feel like the rug's been pulled out underneath you, you've been hit by a bus. And it can take up to 2 weeks for mm-hmm. those to subside.
Mm-hmm.
When normally what happens is when our body exercises, it warns us. Your heart rate increases, your respiratory rate increases, you start feeling tired, and you know that you need to stop.
Sure.
And then when you stop, your body recovers back to normal. The problem is that if we don't watch these symptoms in COVID and lots of post-viral syndromes, these symptoms seem to just carry on. So you're short of breath, you've got an increased heart rate, you have extreme fatigue, you've got headaches, you feel a little bit mentally dull, or the brain fog that everyone's speaking about.
Mm-hmm.
Those can continue for up to 2 weeks if we push ourselves too hard.
Okay. All right. That's fantastic to know and to understand as well. But, you know, there's something that you've also touched on. We'll get to the point of the fact that nutrition is also very important, but children specifically need activity, need to get back to being active. And just your thoughts around that, because quite often when we talk COVID, we are, of course, generally focusing on the adult population. When it comes to children getting back to fitness post-COVID.
I think the only two major points that I want to make is probably this is the first time in the life that in our lives that children haven't been physically active for a sustained period of time. You know, when we grew up, we were just always busy. And this is the first time that children have been forced to not do any physical activity, forced not to go out their homes, no school sports, no organized sporting activity, dancing, cricket, swimming, whatever it might be. And I think we need to realize the benefit and the importance of that for children, number one. But we also need to realize that when children come back, they have had these long layovers. So unfortunately, we need to just think slightly differently, not that much differently, just about the fact that these children are probably going to need to come back to sports a little bit more slowly than what they would have had to do. So it's not like after December holidays, let's get kids running 5 days a week, 3 hours a day, and overload them and overburden them, because that's when we're seeing lots of injuries in the kids, and we're often seeing the kids getting sick as well. And if they have had COVID, they also, even fit, healthy young people, can unfortunately develop this long COVID or this post-exertional malaise.
Mm-hmm.
So again, it's just about having a little bit of common sense and returning these kids at an acceptable rate, slowly back into activity, gradual return to activity. But I really hope government hears me. They need to keep activity open for children, for their mental health, for their physical development, as well as just from their emotional and social development.
Mm.
The research is overwhelming about the benefits of exercise for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I was hosting a discussion with teachers and other professionals who work with children, and you know they'll be the first to tell you that it's you can see the sort of and feel the deprivation, the frustration, the pent up energy, just the general lack that kids are experiencing because they aren't or they weren't in so many government schools, especially you know extramural activities, physical activities for the kids, and it makes a substantial difference to their mental and emotional health. You know, that's definitely something we can't compromise. So Claire, when it comes, go ahead.
Sorry, the last thing I wanted to say is I think schools need to realize that parents now are also kind of returning to work. So often extramural activities is the only safe place that children have to exercise. But yeah, that's the last point.
Yeah. Nutrition, really quickly before I let you go, keeping an eye on that and its role, of course, in COVID-19 recovery.
So it's very simple, you know, eat well, you know, eat home-prepared food more than you're going to eat shop-prepared food. Have a colorful plate. I'm not a nutritionist, but just the simple stuff. Make sure that you eat your micronutrients, eat fruits, eat vegetables, and then eat protein and carbohydrates and a bit of fat. So just keep a logical, simple diet of more healthy food than junk food, and more food that is colorful and more food that is prepared at home. And we need to realize that our bodies have been under attack, and so we need to give them more weapons to fight with. And good food is just going to help them have more available to fight this inflammation, to fight the fatigue that they're dealing with so often after COVID.
Thank you so much for your time this morning. Really appreciate you taking time out to start the day with us. Really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for feeling. Have a nice day.
Will do you too. Claire Ann Kilroy is a physiotherapist in private practice, as well as a part-time lecturer at the Wits University Physiotherapy Department.